to OddPod, everybody. Let's get started. I asked Heather Boehm to answer some questions about her life and career, and for some reason, she very kindly obliged. Heather is a violinist and violist in the Pitt Orchestra for Hamilton here in Chicago, and she's played in theater productions for a while. She also contracts other musicians for tons of different events in the area through her company, Choice Music Chicago. To top it all off, she's president of the Chicago chapter of the Theater Musicians Association. So I'm here with Heather. She was gracious enough to come to my house that's out in the boonies, and it's snowing, so she gets extra bonus points. How are you doing today? Are you weathering the snow okay?
I actually love it. I think it's great that it looks like winter finally. Oh, I would could have dealt with it being a little earlier than March.
Are you from this area?
Yes, very much.
And
so.
You're just like all about the snow?
I like the winter.
Okay.
I like the season thing.
To each her own.
Yeah. It freaks me out a little bit when it's 70 degrees in
February.
That's
true. You know, you tend to be like this feels really comfortable, but also it'll be really uncomfortable in like a couple years when global warming has hit and we're all gonna die.
Exactly.
But that's kind of a
exactly.
bummer. But,
plus the whole like fresh snow thing, you know.
There's something poetic about it, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's like pretty. It's pretty. I feel like it's pretty for about 5 minutes and then I try to drive in it and then I feel full of rage. But
aww.
Maybe that's just me. So let's dive in here. How did you first begin your love affair with music? What's your origin
My
story?
My love affair with music. It's continuing. It's sometimes fraught. But it endures nonetheless.
Oh, good.
I started playing violin when I was about 3.5, 4.
Oh, my.
Apparently, I'd been asking for it for some time before then, which I don't remember. But other people remember. And apparently, like, the powers that be broke down around 3.5 or 4 and said, okay, fine. I remember I did Suzuki violin with a instructor whose name was Barbara Bredemeyer, who taught out of her home in Northbrook. Oh. She had a small studio, and I was really lucky to study with her. She was a Gingold student from Indiana, but had also come into the Suzuki method real early.
Uh-huh.
And she taught sort of a combination. I would say it was pretty traditional Suzuki, but the auxiliary activities that she had for us were like, we were always reading little trios and doing chamber music stuff. And
oh, that's good.
So it was very supplemented, I think. The Suzuki traditional, series was very supplemented by other things. She did a great job with that. But I do remember going to my first lesson and you didn't get an actual violin, which apparently if I had been promised this, I had been wanting it for years. It was somewhat of a letdown. I think I got like a Cracker Jack box.
Yeah, the box violin.
The Kleenex box with the ruler in it.
Right.
With the Cracker Jacks. And I was like, what is this?
This is bullshit.
Yeah. On the way back, I was like, I promised this violin. But I don't know, after like 7 months of lion holds and foot charts or whatever, the reward was that you got the actual one.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember being super bummed because like the big reveal was that you got to open up this tissue box and eat the Cracker Jack inside of it. And I discovered it precisely that moment that I cannot stand Cracker Jack.
Oh, no. Oh, well.
But, you know, it was somewhat compensated for because I finally had that actual violin.
Right, yeah.
So that is how it began. And, it was probably fraught and enduring even at the beginning.
And then at, like, what point were you like, yeah, I think I want to keep doing this? And,
you know, I think I kind of always, for some reason, I always thought I was going to be a musician. Like, when you look back at, like, you know, like those things that you make in kindergarten of like, what are you going to do? And people are like, I'm going to be a ballerina or a bus driver, you know? And I was like drawing pictures of like playing the violin on stage, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think I ever really seriously wanted to do anything other than music. But
That's cool.
I did do a dual degree at DePaul, I did music business and violin performance.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
I think my rationale for that was that like, I thought, well, you know, what if I can't totally support myself as a performer?
Yeah.
I want to make sure that I'm working in like a field that I love, like kind of regardless, you know? You know, I don't mind like doing like ditzy little activities, you know, for like marketing or PR, or, like I'll stuff envelopes, I think was what I was thinking, as long as I know I'm doing it for something that I really love. So
that makes sense. That's a good idea.
And you, do you feel like since then, like since you did a dual degree, like in music business, do you feel like that's like it gave you a leg up? Or
I feel like during college, I was like pretty driven to like do a lot of work outside of school. So like I started with like an internship at the symphony, and then I worked part time at Lyric Opera in marketing and PR.
Oh wow.
And I did library intern and then assistant librarian work at Grant Park Music Festival. So I think that like some of me was a little like, oh, you know, like I'm doing a lot of extra things, but I'm really glad that I did it now afterwards. But at the time, I remember sometimes being like, I just want to practice my violin, you know?
I just want to play. Yeah, no, I feel you. Can I ask what the draw of DePaul was?
The draw of DePaul was that it was kind of close to my family who's in Glenview.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I really liked the teacher that I entered with, which was Joe Genwaldi, when he was still there. And then also the fact that they made like kind of a clear case for me in terms of like scholarship money and like the ability to do those two different things. Like they were going to take a lot of my like high school AP stuff, and that would allow me the time to do multiple degree programs as opposed to one. Which I thought was a good thing. And I think at some point somebody said, like, it might be a good idea to do something close to Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, like, you'll meet people, you'll get to see, like, you'll be on the fringes of it and, like, kind of in the wings, but you'll get to see kind of, like, the cultural
landscape. It's like a good scene to be a part of.
Yeah, there's a lot of really diverse and dynamic things going on, from new music to chamber music to all the way up to the symphony and the opera and Baroque, great jazz scene, lots of, you know, cool pop and contemporary music that's happening here. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So now you know, you play a lot of theater, you do a lot of contracting, you're a busy lady. And one of the things that you do is called Choice Music Chicago. Can you explain what that is and what your role is in that?
Sure. Choice Music Chicago is something that was started by a friend of mine who's a trumpet player. And when I was between the years when I graduated in like 2008, I was doing some playing for him at those churches.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2008, the trumpet player's name was Chris Richardson.
Mm-hmm.
He decided that he wanted to go back to U of C for an MBA program. And he said to me, like, all of the music directors like working with you, and I don't want to do this while I'm in school. Do you want me to hand it over to you? And I said, sure, I'd be happy to take a stab at that. So at that point, with what he had set up, it was basically musicians for different Catholic churches and Lutheran churches, and basically like assisting music directors in terms of staffing their weddings or, you know, instrumental needs for Christmas and Easter and things like that. So now I'd say it's beyond that sort of instrumental needs for churches, and it's everything from private events and weddings and corporate functions, and maybe like a little bit of a channel for, you know, other institutions in terms of like we're putting on this PBS concert or you know, I'm a band leader, a musical service company, and I need something with strings. Like Choice Music handles that for a bunch of different clients, and that's been wonderful. It's allowed me, like over the years, I've gotten a lot more into the idea of like doing my own arrangements for things, just out of like sheer frustration at like what I could buy.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel you. I've played some of your arrangements and they're wonderful. No, I definitely understand. You just reminded me that like very recently somebody was wanting me to play like a solo cello thing, and they asked me if I could mix it up a little bit, and I did, but it just, you know, I realized, I was like, no, there isn't like a solo version of, you know, like Christina Perry, like 1,000 years something.
I have one.
You have one?
Of course
one?
I do. Yes.
Like I could just play the melody, honestly.
Yes,
and like,
you could.
Well, I
played in bass clef for you and everything.
Girl. Well, then we'll have to talk later. But yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. But yeah, it's just, yeah, I understand like the frustration with like what you can actually like access. And you're like, screw it. I'll just do it myself.
Yeah, exactly. That was it. I think we got hired to do Susie McMonagall's wedding at Cafe, North Pond, which is like a restaurant pretty near Cafe Brouwer in Lincoln Park. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I really want a bunch of contemporary stuff. I was like, awesome, cool. And I went online and I was like, I'm going to add these things. And I bought a bunch of stuff from a company that shall remain nameless and spent hundreds of dollars just because I was like, I'm going to use this stuff forever.
Yeah.
And it came and we read it and it was like, oh no.
Like garbage.
No. This can't be. You know, like the Blackbird arrangement was like 12 bars long. And
oh my God.
There was like some song that like went into like In the Hall of the Mountain King in the middle of it.
What?
Like, I totally do not.
Somebody was feeling really creative and it was just.
It was a little too creative. It was like, no, I actually just want like the form and feel of the original song.
Right.
As arranged for string quartet.
Like what most people have listened to.
Exactly. And I called them on like Monday and I was like, here's what, you know, I bought this stuff and it cost a fortune. And
yeah,
they were like, well, all of our arrangers went to Juilliard. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm just going to have to do it myself. So, yeah.
Oh, man. So, I mean, do you have any goals for Choice Music Chicago, like in the long run, or... you just hope like it keeps going, or
I'd say like we're working on a bunch of stuff right now. I would say that like over the last couple of years, like organically out of doing these arrangements as requests and you know, adding like what I have wanted to add and what people have requested for their weddings, we've got like a huge library of stuff right now. So I would love to get that a little bit more codified into something that like more people could have access to, because I think it would be super helpful. I know I needed it, so I imagine that there's other people out there that would need it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's definitely a goal. And then kind of going back over some of like my earlier stabs at things which weren't perhaps as good as they would be now, like with a couple of years experience in doing them. Like I look back and kind of like horror, particularly at like for some reason I thought like the Dream Police by Cheap Trick was gonna work great for a string quartet. But like that was before I understood that, like, you know, like someone has got to have like the rhythm part in this. Not just
there are some things that's like you just don't realize it until you start like playing it. You're like, oh, I forgot, I like didn't realize that particular element was actually like quite essential.
Right, exactly. And you can't really take like the idea that you can take somehow like the rhythm section out of you know, like your average pop tune is like a fallacy.
And like if you're doing like an actual cover, if you're like an artist like covering somebody else's thing and you're like wanting to be like really creative with it, that's one thing. But when you're a string quartet, like it's such a, I feel like it's a very different vibe and a very different skill, like needing to arrange something like a pop song for an event. Like people just want to hear what they've heard before. They want it to be immediately recognizable. So if people are getting like artsy fartsy and like taking things out and stuff, like
yeah, there's not going to be like a mashup of
like nobody's gonna be into that. They're gonna be like, what am I listening to?
Right.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like the worst case scenario would be like you're walking down the aisle to Happy Together and it turns into, you know, the aforementioned In the Hall of the Mountain King in the middle would be kind of bad.
Everybody's like, where am I? This is terrifying, including the musicians.
Exactly.
So when you're not contracting and arranging and doing all that stuff, you played a lot of theater gigs. I feel like one thing, I mean, I've been lucky enough to get some theater gigs more recently. And I feel really lucky to have gotten that. And there are a lot of people who are, you know, like just coming out of school, who I think they get out of school and they're like, oh my God, like, how do I work? What do I do? And they want to know. Theater gigs are like one thing that I feel like really eludes people, because I think nobody tells them like who they're supposed to get in touch with, like what steps they should take to like try to get their foot into that world and that kind of thing. So, I mean, how did you start getting theater gigs?
I think the first thing that I played for that was like a professional theater gig was Passion at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, which was Gary Griffin directed it and Rob Berman music directed it. Anna Gasteyer was in the role of Fosca, and that was really fun. It was a very like small chamber version of that, and I discovered that I really liked it, but I had honestly kind of known that already. Like, I enjoyed playing for like community theater productions of Pirates of Penzance,
yeah, you know?
Like, and things like that too. I always have really liked the idea of playing with singers. It's probably something that I like a lot about the, you know, quartet pop songs types things too. Yeah. Is just I like playing with, whether it's opera, whether it's musical theater, or whether it's a band. I like playing with singers a lot. I think there's a really cool thing that happens in terms of like matching their phrasing. It gives me like ideas that maybe I didn't have in terms of like how to interpret something.
Yeah.
And it makes it always fresh and interesting every time, because the interpretations can change a little bit. It's not it's based on, you know, how they're feeling and they're reading the audience, and that's exciting to me.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. So whether it's opera or music or theater or whatever, I really enjoy that a bunch. As far as how to get, you know, started in it, I mean, I think that a big thing is just, I don't know that I would be able to say that there's anything better than putting, I mean, there's other ways. Like, there's all sorts of back channel-y ways that people get involved in things. But the surefire, like, if you're playing the long game thing, I could say, is get in touch with the people whose names that you're seeing in the programs and offer and express to them that you are interested in subbing. And then do a really great job subbing.
Yeah.
That, I think, is something that will go further than almost anything else. And really, it may not happen as quickly as, like, you know, say to your friend, you know, to put you on the gig or something like that.
Yeah.
But like, that's, I think, a way to build up like a career over the long term.
And every time, especially like when you're a sub, like, first of all, it's hard to sub. And then when you sub well, I feel like it's kind of like a good audition for like everybody who happens to be there.
Exactly.
Like all the other musicians who might be in a, like, in a position later to,
and
like,
you
hire
never
you.
Know, like, yeah, out of that group, like, how many people, I would think people have like a, you know, like, they all but like throw like a ticker tape parade for you.
Right.
You know, like when you do a great job.
That's true.
Subbing, because everybody's so happy. I mean, like, the regular is happy in terms of like there's somebody who, you know, can step in for them and allow them to be at family commitments or other things like that that they need to attend to. And it's great for the conductor or the music director, music supervisor. Everyone's happy when there's like a good subbing pool, and that's part of the reason. And then you never know who else is playing in the pit in terms of, like, I mean, I think that's true for lots of different gigs, that you never know, like, if you're sitting next to somebody who maybe does some hiring, or if there's a contractor over there in the woodwind section who's paying attention. And I think that offering yourself up as a sub and then having the time to really, you know, knock it out of the park is the best thing that you could do.
That makes a lot of sense.
That would be what I would say is like a surefire.
Yeah.
I stand behind this.
Yes. Yes. No, that makes a lot of sense. I like
way it. To do it. And then patience, you know, like, there's a lot of people in line, and I think a lot of people just kind of wear people out with their zealousness maybe to get involved in it, which everybody understands. Totally.
It is like a very difficult line to walk, I think, between like reminding people that you're alive and like, and making sure you remind people you're alive, and then also making sure you're not like making a pest of yourself.
Totally. But I think that's something that people can do, and people can sense like the motivations. I think I meant in terms of the wearing out, like, it's, or patience, like, it's more important for you, like, for your head state.
That's true.
To not set yourself up for something like, man, why am I not getting anything?
Yeah.
And it's like, I've been here for 5 months, you know, and it's
5 months.
Make it years. Like, expect it to take a second.
Yeah,
you know, it's not
absolutely
for the majority. I mean, there's always going to be those people who it's like, oh my God, you know, like, it kind of like fast tracked or whatever.
Yeah, but is not the norm.
You can't expect that. And if you do, you're going to get super bummed out. And
absolutely,
we don't want that to happen to anyone.
It's really hard to like put your eagerness on like the back burner and just be like, going to happen when it happens. Like, all you can do is just keep trying to, like, play well in every situation you can.
Totally. And I think also for people who are doing it, there's a comfort in knowing that, like, you're respecting the channels.
Yeah.
You know what I
yes,
mean?
Yes, absolutely.
And like,
there's such, you're... like, a way that, like, things are done.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, yeah.
Yeah. it's nice for people to know that, like, here's somebody who cares about doing it the right way.
Yeah.
And, you know, isn't going to, like, kick the crutch from some old lady to get the gig, right. You know? Like, it's important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. No. I think that's a good thing. And, like, that patience and... there's nothing wrong with reminding people that you're out there. I think, yeah, I think sometimes people, like, you can feel bad in terms of, like, oh man, I really don't have anything to give you. But, like, but there's never, like, a feeling of, like, oh, that person's so annoying. I mean, everybody knows what that is. And if you're doing it in the right way with some patience and you're prepared to put in time summing, I think that's a good, like, surefire, may not be the quickest, but will get you where you want to go.
Yeah.
It'll get you where you want to go.
So being so involved in theater, you've gotten particularly involved in Theater Musicians Association. And I can't remember, are you involved on, like, the national and the local level?
Yes.
Okay, so there's, like, the TMA, like, nationwide, and then, like, the Chicago chapter of TMA. So so can you tell me again, like, what you do in those two spheres?
Definitely. Like, if you're thinking about the... Theater Musicians Association, you could kind of, like, AB that to, like, the American Federation of Musicians, where there's, like, a national organization that you join when you sign up to be a member of a local union. Mm-hmm. And then there's the local union that you're going to have, like, most of your dealings with, you know, in your everyday life. TMA is set up very similarly in terms of there's a National Theater Musicians Association that has a board of directors that's, like, pulled from the different cities where there are chapters. Mm-hmm. And then we have the Chicago Theater Musicians Association, which also has, you know, a board of directors and a secretary treasurer and a vice president and a president at a local level. And so in all of those local TMA chapters are doing, you know, their local TMA chapter thing, but they're part of that national. So if you join, like, a local chapter, you are automatically part of the national.
Right.
And what I do in Chicago now is I'm the president of the Chicago chapter. Mm-hmm. And that means that I have a position on, like, the national board in terms of, like, part of the executive board, mostly as, like, a representative for our chapter.
Gotcha.
So it's my job to, like, be on conference calls and, like, discuss, like, what we want to do. You know, with our board locally, so that I'm in a good position to represent, you know, Chicago's position on things in those national conversations.
Okay.
And I just recently became the president. Well, not super recently, June of 2016. And before that I was secretary treasurer for several years, which was a good way to, I would recommend, like, secretary treasurer position, if TMA is any indication, is, like, a nice position to kind of see how an organization works.
Yeah.
Because you're so involved in, you know, basically, like, the lifeblood of that, which is, like, you know, soliciting members and getting, you know, people's applications and materials in, making sure that those get to the national, and making sure that members know that, like, we received your stuff and thank you so much for joining. So that's what I did before in Chicago.
Okay.
For that.
Cool. And what are you, are there goals that you have for our chapter as our new leader?
Definitely. I think that there's a perception in a way that the Theater Musicians Association is an organization for people who feel like they're, air quotes, you know, getting enough work in theater.
Yeah.
And if that is the case, then we might as well kind of hang it up right now, because there are a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people who would, I mean, you're rarely going to find a musician that's like, I've got the perfect amount of work.
Like, I'm set.
Yes. You know, like, it's hard. It's a real grind. And like, it's a patchwork quilt. So I think it's got to be an organization that's consisting of people who are musicians with a vested interest in seeing that, like, the artistic standards, things like minimums and orchestrations and instrumentations, are remaining at a level that is consistent to that of the original. I don't think that we really set out to be that, but it's odd how that the Musicians Union and maybe TMA in general has become kind of like, you know, like the number one looker at her at, you know, things like, can you do this with only three people?
Yeah.
You
know,
like, is it possible?
Can you take a 10-piece orchestra and put it in a keyboard?
Right, exactly. But there's nobody else doing it. You can't really expect producers to do it. And I think sometimes you get producers who are fantastic or a music team. You know, obviously the music team has, you know, the best intentions, but they're getting their marching orders from somebody else too.
Yeah.
So I think it's people who have a vested interest in making sure that like this remains a viable profession and and that we're fighting against things like electronic replacement when it's possible.
Absolutely.
You know,
virtual orchestra.
Exactly. Like that Sunset Boulevard that's on Broadway right now with like 41 musicians on stage. Yeah. That's beautiful, but that's definitely the exception.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not the rule at this point. I was just doing some reading about Sweeney Todd and discovering that the 1979 production on Broadway with Jonathan Tunick's orchestrations had 26 people, which was not a coincidence. It was the minimum at that theater. So this is not a new issue to 2017. It's always sort of been a case of like, what's the minimum? Okay, we want to do it with that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think just kind of carrying that torch of something that's been going on for a long time and making sure that we're doing everything that we can to make audiences aware that we're there, which is tough because we're hidden and a lot of the sound is not acoustic anymore.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard multiple times like about people coming down to the pit rail and just being like, oh my God, there are people down here.
Right.
And just like, I'm glad I bothered to wake up today.
I think it's hard to not let that get you down, and it's hard to not let it be something that makes you real cynical into like, nobody cares about what I do. But that's ultimately not, I don't think that like head state leads to a good place.
No,
ultimately,
you're right.
Like checking out. I think that it's got to be, I understand why you could think that because you're not hearing this, you know, from the way that you would during, you know, an orchestra concert where you
absolutely
see the entire symphony.
Yeah.
And it's like, clearly these are the people who are playing.
Yeah.
You know, like you're hearing something through, you know, the mains and the half stacks, and it's all
it's
kind
getting
of
mixed
thing.
And
exactly.
All this stuff. So,
and it needs to. It needs to be something where, like, you know, if the singers, you know, need a little boost, you know, they can be tweaking.
Yeah.
You know,
it's necessary. It just apparently leads to confusion.
It does lead to a lot of confusion. And it's something that I think we have to take responsibility for as musicians in terms of like, this is our issue. It's not something that anybody else is going to go out of their way to educate.
We have to. We're just going to have to like cater a little bit to our audience. I think more to a greater degree than sometimes we're willing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's something that it's not unique to theater musicians. I mean, like people get out of Chicago Symphony Orchestra concerts and have patrons say to them, but what do you really do for a living? You know, I mean, and that might be shocking.
That's so upsetting. But I know you're right. But like,
it's shocking, but it's a different, people coming from a different perspective.
Absolutely.
So I think we have to take responsibility for people knowing that we're down there and educating people on what we're doing, which is not something that necessarily comes supernaturally to many musicians.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of time alone. We spend a lot of time practicing. And as you pointed out, some of these comments, you know, are a little insulting. Like, it's a little insulting.
But, like, they don't know it's insulting.
They don't
like,
know.
They don't mean to.
But it's like, I had no idea you were there. People, you know, like, their hackles get up, and they're like, oh, man.
Yeah, it's like people need to just, like, push their feelings aside a little bit and just be like, okay.
Like, yeah, like, this is what it is.
I just need to solve this problem. Like, I need to get rid of this confusion.
Yeah. And it seems, I think that, like, the self-promotion part of musicians in the pit, again, it's not necessarily something that, like, you have to feel like, you know what, I think I'd be really comfortable doing that. But you have to ask yourself, is it necessary?
Yeah.
Like, do we have an issue if people don't know that we're here?
Yes.
And then do we need to do something about it? And then what is that? Let's make it something that's in conjunction with the union, that's in conjunction with things that are necessary for and helpful for, you know, the theater and the producers. It could be something as simple as making sure that the musicians take part in a talk back. You know, yeah. I guarantee that some of the children or people at a student matinee are going to be very interested
Absolutely.
In what's going on underneath the stage. Like there are kids out there that play the violin, that play the piano, that play drum set, that play yeah. whatever, and they're going to be interested. And a lot of times we have the thought that like, okay, it's done and I'm, you know, the first.
Yeah, like I played my gig, I'm going to go home.
Exactly.
Eat some Doritos or
but
something.
But like that's a pretty easy thing that we can do to make sure that people know that we're there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important. And once you start seeing it, it's like, how can I find some ways to make a difference on this so that I'm not just kind of being carried by whatever
yeah.
the trend is? I think that's really empowering and that's a good thing for everyone, for yeah. audiences, for musicians, for the whole world. Community.
Well, I feel like that's a very uplifting note to end on. Thank you for your continued leadership in the theater musician community. And yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great to chat with you about this. Thanks for making it so fun and enjoyable.
Thanks for listening. Check out episode 6 on March 30th, which will feature somebody. Just check the OddPod Facebook or Twitter that week and you'll be able to find out who's making an appearance.